This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Craft beer is a nationwide phenomenon. It's part of the same food movement that has increased demand for everything from fine wine to specialty coffee to locally grown, freshly prepared foods. But unlike the surge in popularity of those things, craft beer may become a victim of its own success, at least in North Carolina, and brewers point to the state's antiquated laws as the culprit. The word antiquated is their word. We hear from a brewer and a restaurateur this hour, and later in the hour, we hear from someone on the opposite side of this issue. We start with Ryan Self, who is the director of sales for Old Mecklenburg Brewery. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. We'll also be joined later on by Brian Meredith with Queen City Q. Craft beer, Ryan, is so successful in Charlotte, and I guess it's successful in North Carolina, that we seem to be, we have beer literally flowing in the streets here, it seems. How many different breweries are in operation here in Charlotte right now?
I believe the last count in the immediate Charlotte area, and this is if you're going to count Lake Norman all the way out to Monroe, is 24 that are operational right now.
And if we were having this conversation 2 years ago, how many would there have been?
Probably 10 or 12.
So the demand for craft beer is rising precipitously. I mean, it's fast.
Charlotte's an incredible market. We opened up about 7 years ago. There were zero in Charlotte. And at the time, you know, it's always the question of what's the demand for local beer? And all these years later, we're seeing not only are we growing, but every brewery is growing.
I know you're not the founder of Old Mecklenburg Brewery, but is Old Mecklenburg one of the older craft brewers in town?
We are the oldest existing craft brewery in Charlotte. That's
so
right.
So when did you start?
About 7 years ago.
And when you started, how big was the operation, and how big did you think it would become?
Well, it's a hard thing to predict. You know, the founder of the company always says, I can make you a beautiful business plan, but it doesn't mean anything if you try and actually go sell your product. When I started there, a few months into our operation, you know, we were brewing 15 barrels of beer about once a week to give you a sense of what we were doing. And every few weeks, we'd actually brew none. That was enough beer to cover the market. This was a very different time, and you know, craft beer was still taking off. I was doing sales for the company then. I would visit, you know, restaurateurs and tell them, oh, I've got a local beer here. I've got something made in Charlotte, and would get sort of a resounding, so what? Obviously, that's changed quite a bit in the last few years. Now that's become a selling point of the brand and all the Charlotte beers, having something that's fresh, something that's locally made. So a drastic change. It's hard to say if we knew how fast it would grow. I think this caught us all a little bit by surprise, how much of a demand there was.
How big is your footprint today?
So we did just a little shy of 20,000 barrels of beer last year.
Okay. And Charlotte, as healthy as it is as a craft beer market, is not the healthiest market in the state, is it?
Well, Charlotte's very strong. Asheville is extremely strong. Asheville and Raleigh both have something of a head start on us. They have breweries that go back years and years before Old Mecklenburg was in business. So Charlotte was a little behind the curve, but I would argue it's making up room very quickly.
So that's Ryan Self. He's the director of sales for Old Mecklenburg Brewery. And we have another guy with a R-Y-A-N in his name, Brian. Brian Meredith is the managing partner of Queen City Q. They have four restaurants, Uptown, Matthews, Concord, Ballantyne, all serving craft beers. This isn't just a situation, this craft beer industry, Brian, where people go to the brewery and enjoy the beer. It's sold in grocery stores, it's sold in restaurants, it's sold in bars. And in restaurants, has craft beer become a premium item, a feature item, a must-have item?
For us, yes. We sell far and away more craft beer than any other type of beer.
So it's not just another pull. I don't know what you call those things, the taps. It's not just another tap in a line of taps.
Well, that's correct. At our place uptown, we have 44 taps.
Okay.
And I would argue that probably 42 of them are craft beer.
Mm-hmm. Prior, we're going to talk about what you've done in response to this, to a certain situation that's going on with the distributor. But prior to that, how many of the beers on tap, or the beers that you would even sell in the bottle, were national brands?
Well, let's go back to the beginning. So we've always had 44.
Okay.
In the very beginning, we probably had 7 or 8 taps that were brewed here in Charlotte. And then we had maybe 10 that were brewed in the Carolinas in addition to that. So out of 44, we started with about 17,
okay.
18 maybe. And that's grown now to where we have about 22 or 23 taps that are Charlotte brewed beer. And we have probably another 10 that are Carolinas brewed. And then the rest would be, you know, we rotate things like Trogs out of Pennsylvania and Bell's, and we have Guinness on tap and things like that that are more nationally focused.
But you can't get a Budweiser there.
That's correct.
As of December 15th, I understand, you stopped selling Anheuser-Busch products at your four restaurants. And when that boycott went into effect, you actually threw away product that you had on hand. What's your beef with Anheuser-Busch?
So I guess the day before that, I read an article in the Wall Street Journal where this writer was writing about Anheuser-Busch InBev's new bonus plan for their distributor network. And what I want to say about that is I don't have a beef with the distributors at all. In fact, we still buy from Adams, who's the Anheuser-Busch rep here in Charlotte. But what they basically did was they said, hey, listen, we want you guys to sell more of our beer. But that really isn't what they said. What they said is we want you to stop selling other beer. So as long as our percentage of your total sales remains at this number, we don't care whether you stop selling them or sell more of us. If the percentage stays the same, we're going to pay you a bonus. Oh, but here's another caveat. If you sell a craft beer from a brewery that does more than 15,000 barrels, then that disqualifies you. So right away, you have a situation in North Carolina specifically that if you're a distributor and you carry Anheuser-Busch InBev products and you want that bonus, but you already have a contract with a brewery in North Carolina who does more than 15,000 barrels, you now have to make a choice. Do I honor that contract with this brewery, or do I stop selling their beer and I take my bonus? Well, how can you say no?
Okay.
They can say it's voluntary all they want, how can you say no?
Is Old Mecklenburg in that category of brewing more than 15,000 barrels a year?
Yeah, we did just shy of 20,000 last year.
So you've got that going against you, and you also, as I say, you've become victim of your own success because state law has some caps on how much you can produce. Explain that law.
That's right. So North Carolina has a law in the books, and this is, you mentioned antiquated. That's how we think of it. We think it's a law that no longer fits the marketplace that says that an independent brewery in the state may not brew and self-distribute more than 25,000 barrels of beer per year. Now, even 6-7 years ago, that law seemed comfortably adequate. The idea of a brewery, a craft brewery in particular, brewing that much beer when beer was so controlled by a few major multinational corporations was sort of silly. You had these small breweries that would do a few thousand barrels, but the idea of getting to that size independently, it didn't think the market would support that. Craft beer market has changed quite a bit, obviously. That's what consumers want now. That's what our restaurateurs are asking us for now. And so the demand is there, and yet we have this law in the books that is throttling us. And situations like the one that Brian mentioned where AB InBev is free to create what they call a bonus program for distributors now creates a market that is no longer an independent three-tier system. It's a system that is weighted against us. And we're asking lawmakers, why would you want to send us into this lion's den where we're selling against national brands with deep pockets beer that's not made in the state, instead of something that's made here in North Carolina and only sold here in North Carolina?
Why? Obviously, this the fact that you have to have a distributor over a certain number of barrels of production per year doesn't just affect you. It affects Anheuser-Busch. It affects Coors. And they're brewing what? A million, half a million barrels of more than that, probably.
Oh, easy.
Of beer a year. Why do they have to have a distributor? Why can't they have their own trucks and sell their own? Well, I mean, they probably wouldn't want to have to do this, but why would they not be able to or want to do their own distribution?
Well, the way the law works, you cannot legally sell across state lines, for one. Okay. And we're not opposed to that.
Okay.
There's some sense in that side of the law. You know, if you're Bell's Brewing in Michigan, you don't want to send trucks in North Carolina. It's inefficient. There's no way you'll sell enough beer to make that worthwhile. It makes sense for you to get a third-party logistics company that's going to handle that for you.
So do you need a distributor, if you go over the cap, do you need a distributor to distribute within Mecklenburg County?
Absolutely. If we go over the cap, we need a distributor. Our brewery is about a stone's throw from a handful of restaurants. McCoy Smokehouse in Old Pineville is, you know, you could jog there in two minutes.
Right.
We'd have to have someone come pick up our beer, take it back to their warehouse. It must sit there overnight, then be returned back to that restaurant and sold to them at about a 30% cost to us, by the way.
So you're doing very well. Other brewers are doing very well. And you're having to throttle back your production to stay under the 25,000 barrel per year cap. I'm told that you pulled out of the Triad. You walked away from a $130,000 investment there in, I guess, warehouse and distribution services of your own.
That's correct.
So that you wouldn't go over the cap. How much money is that costing you?
Well, we'll never truly know, because the really frustrating part of that, you know, there's investing in a warehouse, there's investing in cold space. That's a real cost, and that's frustration. The thing that we'll never know is the opportunity cost. We had a sales rep living in the Triad who spent the last 2 years getting to know restaurants, getting to know bars and bottle shops, and creating awareness of the brand in the Triad. That's a long process. It was a long process in Charlotte. It was a long process up there. And right as we're turning a corner and seeing consistent sales and weekly orders from these accounts and customer awareness grow, we have to stop.
You know, you're a relatively small business. You're not as big. In terms of the beer business, you're not Anheuser-Busch, so you're not as big as they are.
We're a drop in the pint glass.
Okay, so you have a lot of stuff that you have to do. You've got to brew this beer. You're a We have one location to brew, right? Is that right?
That's correct. You have one brewery.
You got to run your own beer garden, which you have, and you've got to handle your own distribution. Why not concentrate on what you do best, making the best beer that you know how to make, as opposed to figuring out how to get it from your brewery to where the consumer will buy and consume it?
Hey Ryan, let me jump in and answer part
sure.
of it. From my perspective as the consumer okay. and seller of Old Mecklenburg, there's a big piece of who we choose to do business with, and that is relationship building. And so what you get with a brewery like Old Mec or Noda or Birdsong or, you know, Unknown or any of these breweries that are in Charlotte themselves is we build a relationship with these folks, and we want to do business with them. And so Old Mec or Noda or any other brewery can do everything they can to make the best beer they can make, but they also want to create relationships with the people that are buying and drinking that beer. And so, you know, what they want is a choice. And that choice is, do we want to have relationships with these customers, or do we simply want to hand that relationship business over to a distributor?
But if you were to get larger, if you were to start brewing 100,000 barrels of beer a year, could you maintain those relationships? Which do you want more, the ability to make a lot of beer and therefore a lot of money, or the ability to maintain these relationships?
Well, the relationships are the core of our business. You know, the quality of our beer and the relationship.
At some point, that tips over. It has to tip over.
Sure it does. There's always a point where the logistics side of the business no longer makes financial sense. I'm sure that's possibly the case. Here's the issue that we're dealing with right now. 25,000 barrels seems like a lot of beer, but it's such a small number in the grand scheme of things up against these multinational corporations that number is so small that if that's the cutoff, if that's where we have to enter into a distributor's book, we'll be so small relative to the national brands they carry that as far as getting what percentage of distributor's attention we will get, it's going to be next to impossible. We're not saying tear down the system. We're not saying end the three-tier system. We're saying let us get big enough before we're forced into this choice that we at least have some control of our brand.
Ryan Self is with Old Mecklenburg Brewery. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bojangles, featuring Country Ham Biscuits, grilled country ham on made-from-scratch buttermilk biscuits served all day, every day, available at area Bojangles. You know, most economists predicted last year a decent year for 2016, but right out of the gate, there have been some very troubling indicators about the economy. The stock market had its worst start of the year ever, with Wall Street's wild swings fueled by China's reported instability, crashing oil prices, and more. Some people even started whispering the R word, recession. But the Fed still plans to keep increasing interest rates slowly, so we try to make sense of it all with a pair of local economists tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the first voting in the 2016 election season begins with the Iowa caucuses, voter turnout, and what the results could mean for the presidential race going forward.
That's the topic of the Diane Rehm Show, ahead from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins, here on listener-supported public radio, we're 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about craft beer and kind of being the victim of their own success, given a state law that limits production to 25,000 barrels a year before the craft breweries have to start using a distributor like the distributors that the major breweries around the country, the national breweries around the country, have to use. We're talking with Ryan Self, director of sales for Old Mecklenburg Brewery, arguably the most successful local brewery in town. Brian Meredith is the managing partner of Queen City Q. They have their own beef with distributors, particularly with Anheuser-Busch. Not the distributor said necessarily, but the beer company itself, and stopped serving their products on December the 15th. How do you choose your brews? Do you seek out local beer? Do you care about the relationship that you might have developed with Noda or Old Mecklenburg or other breweries? We'd like to hear from you on Facebook or Twitter or through email at charlottetalks@wfae.org. According to Craft Freedom, that's an alliance of North Carolina craft breweries and retailers, including Queen City Q, when you let a distributor handle your product, they, and I quote here, take ownership of the brand and control over all sales, delivery, distribution, and quality control during transportation, and you're locked in forever. That's all true?
That's an important distinction we want to make. Is this is not two businesses making a short-term contract. This is not saying...
This is like the toll road.
Exactly. This is, yeah, and about as popular at our brewery.
So go ahead.
So what we're talking about here is state franchise law, which we're not opposed to, by the way, at its face, which is when a brand signs a distributor, that is a binding arrangement. That is not, we can decide, you'll deliver our kegs for a few months, and if we're happy, we'll decide to proceed. That's a binding arrangement.
So there's no sunset on that contract at all? It goes for as long as you're in business and you want to distribute
your beer? There's nothing built in. There are state laws where the two sides, if they must fracture, can seek third-party arbitration, but these things take time. Yeah. And what happens in the meantime is your brand is disappearing from the shelves.
And what do you mean they take ownership of the brand? What does that mean?
So when a distributor takes control of your brand in the market, they own your path to market in that area. So say a distributor handles Mecklenburg County, Union County, we'll say Concord, Mooresville. When you sell with a distributor in that territory, they own your brand rights in that territory. And not only do they own your rights in the sense that only they may distribute them, they can sell and barter those rights as they see fit. Mm-hmm. So we, for example, may say that, Tryon Distributing, who we worked with before, who we have a great relationship with, we may say, all right, let's sign with Tryon and we're going to work with them. And 2 years later, that distributor could go out of business. They could decide that's not a brand that fits our portfolio anymore. They can now turn and sell that brand to, say, the Budweiser house in town, where now the choice is completely out of our hands. It's a market where once you sign that deal, your brand rights in that area are out of your hands.
So given what you decided to do about not selling Anheuser-Busch products on December the 15th, is this part and parcel of that situation where if he were to sign his beer over to a distributor who then is wanting that bonus from Anheuser-Busch, he could crush Old Mecklenburg products?
Oh, absolutely. So let's roll back time for a minute and let's make the assumption that for whatever crazy reason, John Marino over at Old Mec decided to get into a distributorship with Adams, who is the local Budweiser group, right? Mm-hmm. And he did it 4 days before Anheuser-Busch came up with their new distribution plan. He signs that contract, and now they have the totality of sales ability for Old Mec. And they can choose to sell it or not sell it. It's their right. And they make the decision they're going for the bonus, so they're no longer going to sell Old Mec beer. That means I can't get it anymore. Mm-hmm. That means my guests can't have
even
it
if
anymore.
You ask for it?
Even if I ask for it.
You put an order in for it, you
if
know
they,
they're the distributor,
if
they
won't
give
it to
you.
Choose not to sell it, yeah. That's their choice.
But then he's locked into having it distributed
and
only through
them. He's locked into only being able to distribute through them.
Why is that legal?
Because it's a mandated law that he has to do it. He has no choice. But here's the problem. So now they go to the state and they say, hey, listen, we want arbitration. We want to get out of this deal with this company because they're no longer selling our product. Mm-hmm. They say, oh, well, you know, we're trying. Nobody's buying or whatever the argument is. And so they have a fight, and it takes them 9 months, 10 months, a year to get their rights back that they then would have to sell to a different distributor. But in the meantime, they're not selling any product. How does a business go 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 months with zero sales and stay in business? So at the end of the day, Anheuser-Busch gets what they want, puts them out of business. That's the end game here.
What would you like the cap to be raised to?
Well, we think 100,000 barrels is completely reasonable. That's
you thought the 25,000 barrels was reasonable, what,
well,
5 years ago.
And that's true. Here's what most likely happens. At 25,000 barrels, we're still selling beer in Charlotte and the surrounding communities, and that's it. So selling beer and distributing our own beer is still very reasonable for us and still makes the best choice for us. When you get to 100,000 barrels, when you get to a certain number where you start expanding outside of Charlotte, going to other major cities and trying to fill in those gaps, those areas between cities, now logistics gets a lot more difficult, gets a lot more pricey. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, at 100,000 barrels, if we say to ourselves now, okay, now logistics isn't our business anymore. Let's take someone, a distributor who does it for a living. That's our specialty.
Yeah.
Let's go choose one and we'll work with them. At 100,000 barrels, we can walk in and now we can have an actual business conversation. This is no longer a one-sided conversation because now we can say we're big enough and our brand is valuable enough that we'd like to say, let's set some sales goals for the year. Let's set some expectations for you as a distributor, not just send you our brand and say Godspeed and good luck.
But if they don't meet those expectations, you have no recourse. You can't get rid of them, can you? You just told me that you're locked in forever. So what's the point of setting sales goals if they don't try to meet them? You're tattooed all the way over anyway.
Well, the hope is that eventually these things become partnerships, not one-sided arrangements, but you are correct in that.
So when you go, and I know you've been to the legislature to try to get them to raise the cap, was this part of the discussion, not just raising the cap, but changing the nature of the relationships and the ability to get in and out of these relationships at will with distributors? Because there's more than one distributor.
Right.
If one guy's not doing a good job for you, it seems to me that you ought to be able to go to somebody else and negotiate a new deal once the other deal expires. There ought to be a sunset on it, it seems to me.
And without getting too off topic, there is a place for franchise law. That there is a counter-argument that a distributor says, we sign a brand that is this big, if we grow their brand, we have grown this asset, and so we own this asset. It has value. It should be purchased back from us. And I'm not opposed to that argument.
Yeah.
That's why we're much more focused. Franchise law to us is an issue that should be discussed, and there are some vagaries and some finer points around it that you can discuss, but this self-distribution cap to us is the far bigger issue.
Okay.
Because it just defies common sense. The question that I want to ask state lawmakers, and when you say when we tried to bring this to legislature last year, well, I'll tell you what happened was it died in committee. And we were told in no uncertain terms, this bill is not going to see the floor because no one wants to talk about it publicly. And I think, frankly, that's because it's a hard thing to argue against. When you ask a state lawmaker, what is the opposition to a brewery that is born in North Carolina, will always be headquartered in North Carolina, not just distribution facilities, not just factories, but our home base will always be North Carolina-based. Every one of our employees will always be North Carolina-based and spending their money here and paying North Carolina taxes and hiring North Carolina contractors to build out our brew house and our facilities and buying trucks in North Carolina. As long as we're following the same laws everyone else does, we're selling beer in an orderly way, in a way that follows state laws, we're paying taxes. How could you possibly oppose that? How could there possibly be a law in the books that says two independent businesses must meld at some point in a way where one controls the other's path to market?
We have a Republican legislature, the Republican governor, the governor's from Charlotte. We have Republicans who always tout the importance of entrepreneurship.
Yes, they do.
If small brewers aren't entrepreneurs, I don't know what they are. What is their argument against helping you or protecting you or allowing you to thrive in North Carolina? And as you say, keep employees here and keep tax dollars here. What's their argument against that?
I've never been made an argument by a lawmaker.
But this died in committee.
The only argument that I can see, and maybe I'm drawing a conclusion here, but the only argument that I can see is the North Carolina Beer and Wine Wholesalers Association is one of the top, if not the top, campaign contribution entity in the state. And they have a powerful interest in seeing this not change. Because what they have right now is any brewery that reaches a modicum of success is forced directly into their channel and they get their cut.
Are the wineries under the same restrictions that you are?
You know, I'm not as well informed on wineries. I wouldn't want to comment on it.
Brian, you stopped selling Anheuser-Busch products. That means you can't sell Bud Light. People like their Bud Light. Some people do. But it also means you can't sell Stella Artois, as I understand, because they're distributed by the same distributor. What has been the upshot of that?
Let me make one correction. It really doesn't matter that the distributor is the same, because we have no beef with the distributor.
Okay.
We actually get other beer from that same distributor. The issue for me is if Anheuser-Busch InBev owns or manages or has any control at all over the distribution of and the marketing of and the power behind that brewery, we won't sell their product.
Okay.
And so InBev has Stella. That's part of their portfolio. That's why we don't sell them. It isn't because Adams has it. Has it had an impact on us? My overall beer sales have not gone down, and I will share that Stella was one of my top 10 selling beers, but my overall sales haven't gone down.
Can you argue that you've switched over in your four restaurants to a higher quality product?
As
a marketing thing, at least, can you argue that?
Sure, you can spin it however you want. To me personally, this isn't about is this beer better than that beer? Mm-hmm. Because the reality is everybody's taste is different.
Right.
You know, there's so many different kinds of craft beers out there, and there's different kinds of basically domestic beer.
So is this a fairness issue for you or a moral issue for you? Is that why you did it?
Yes. This is a purely business ethical interest on my part.
Are you alone?
I choose not to do business with a company that does this kind of activity.
Are you a lone wolf in this, or are there other restaurateurs such as yourself doing this in other parts of the country or other parts of the Carolinas?
I've had a lot of communication from other businesses that have done the same thing but chose not to make it such a public announcement. Because they weren't sure what the feedback would be, and it's one thing to do something; it's another thing to do it and speak about it.
I think you said, Ryan, at the beginning of our conversation, that there are like 24 craft brewers in this region, and there are others scattered around the state.
Certainly,
and we've said that craft beer is exploding. There is an interest in craft beer; a lot of people love it. But you say that if you combine all of Charlotte's breweries, their output constitutes about 2% of the beer sold in the marketplace. 2%. Does that make you a threat to the national brewers?
We certainly don't think so. Based on their actions, I suppose we are, but we certainly don't think so. And that's the point we always make is, you know, the fact that a local brewery opens and exists does not create any beer demand in of itself. People are going to consume beer. North Carolina residents are going to consume beer. You talk about your sales, Brian, not going down. They're going to get a beer.
Sure they are.
So the question is, do you want it to be a North Carolina-made beer or do you not? Well, right now we guesstimate about 96% of beer sold in North Carolina is made outside of North Carolina. Well, that's a wealth transfer. We want to change North Carolina from a state of producers instead of just a state of consumers.
And when you took this to the legislature, obviously you must have made that argument.
Absolutely.
To whom?
Well, we took it to lawmakers, and we take it to the Wholesalers Association, trying to get their support as well. That was a wall that we hit pretty quickly. And the arguments, you asked the question earlier, you know, so what are the arguments you hear? Who's against this and why?
Yeah.
And I know that one of the gentlemen from the Beer and Wine Wholesaler Association is planning to come on the show later. I know they declined to speak to us directly, and that's unfortunate. But all I can do is take previous points that are made and try to address them. And the quotes that I always hear are, it's about a robust marketplace. And, you know, our comeback to that is always, well, if you had only one cell phone provider or one cable provider, it'd be a robust marketplace. Everyone would still have a cell phone, but the consumer would lose. So you can have a robust marketplace where the consumer loses. And that's what we have right now, is a marketplace where the bar loses, the consumer loses, and the triad.
How are they losing?
Well, in the triad, we just contracted our business. I have always restaurants telling me, well, your beer was just really starting to move and had a foothold here.
Yeah.
And I had customers who'd come in and drink your beer three times a week, and they're bumming because they can't get their beer now.
Yeah.
So who won in that process, really? Well, I'll tell you who won. The other brands, the national brands that are selling in the triad, because guess who's out of the way? A local competitor.
Will that hurt you if you were to able to go back into that market in a year or two or three?
Of course.
Would that hurt you to go back in that market? Would they look at you as unreliable? So why get hooked on you?
Well, you lost the momentum. Absolutely.
To Ryan, that's an unknown. But yeah. For me personally, if I was buying a product from one of the vendors, whether it's straight from the brewery or from a distributor, and they had distribution problems,
mm-hmm.
it would be hard for me to bring that beer back in until I felt pretty confident that I could keep it on the tap for a while.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he's going to have a problem up there.
Here's some comments that have been coming in as we've been talking. Dennis on Facebook, I'm a craft beer consumer. Like many folks, I'm partial to IPAs, but I enjoy all the varieties that local brewers make available. I thought Republicans in our legislature were free enterprise capitalists, so I'm sure your guest can answer this. Are lobbyists steering this law? You probably just said yes a moment ago, didn't you?
The answer is yes.
Yeah. Gio on Twitter, this type of law is obstructive to growth. Growth leads to hiring locally and increased sales and other tax revenues, which is something you also
actually. Mike, may I speak to that?
Sure.
Because when we talk about jobs, that's an important point for us. You're going to hear a lot of rhetoric that opposes a change in this law about jobs. Well, that happened last year too, and we tried to get this law changed. And one of the points they always made was, "Oh, we've got this MillerCoors plant in Eden, for example." Mm-hmm. Now, no one could ever point out to us how letting local breweries self-distribute was going to somehow cost MillerCoors jobs, but that was what they used as one of their talking points was, we have this plant here, there is beer made in North Carolina that is made by Big Beer. Well, as you know, that plant unceremoniously announced they're closing that plant not soon after the session there, and lawmakers are actually quite upset about that and brought that up. You're going to hear all this rhetoric about jobs, and we've got something that's not empty rhetoric. I've got 6 sales guys and I've got 5 delivery drivers on the line here. I got 11 jobs in Charlotte that live in Charlotte, spend locally, pay taxes locally. If you fold our brand into one of these distribution houses, it doesn't create one job. It just creates one more brand for that existing salesman and delivery driver to juggle. So you immediately stifle jobs locally, you damage our brand, and you damage the consumer's ability for choice as well. Everyone loses except for large multinational beer corporations.
Why doesn't this run afoul of antitrust laws? It sounds like a monopoly, controlling in the hands of big beer versus small brewers.
That's a question I'd love to see lawmakers answer publicly.
Yeah, that's an interesting avenue. I think part of the problem really stems way back to when they created the 3-tier system. They almost intentionally created opportunities for monopolies and monopolies at different tiers of the scenario. And that's something that certainly needs to be explored.
Brian Meredith is managing partner with Queen City Q. Ryan Self is the director of sales for Old Mecklenburg Brewery. As Ryan alluded to in a moment, we're going to come back and talk with somebody on the other side of this issue to have them talk about their point of view on this. And that's happening right on the other side of our break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Belk College of Business, offering a master's degree in real estate. Details on the February 10th info session at realestate.uncc.edu. We're going to talk about the results of, we're not going to, with the Diane Rehm Show, we'll be talking about the results of the first major test of the 2016 presidential campaign, yesterday's Iowa caucuses, and today marks 1 week from the New Hampshire primary. I'm sure they'll be talking about that in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And when we come back, we're going to hear from the executive director of the North Carolina Beer and Wine Wholesalers Association. They represent beer and wine distributors. We'll let them weigh in on what we're talking about this morning in just a moment or two. Stay with us.
China makes and exports all kinds of things. One thing they don't make for themselves, timber.
The problem is that China is a hungry nation in terms of timber. It's got a deficit between its local production and what it needs. And it looks to many countries, including Myanmar, to to get its raw materials from.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Chinese timber made in, yeah, I don't know. It's next time on Marketplace from APM.
This evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about craft beer being a victim of their own success, given a state law that says if you brew more than 25,000 barrels of beer per year, you have to use a distributor. And many local breweries don't want to do that for a number of reasons that we've been talking about. Ron on Twitter says, in other states, the law is called a beer baron law. It is terrible for consumers. Why keep it at all? Dan emails, why not join with other small breweries and start your own distributor? Before I move on, that's a very good question. Ryan, why not start your own distributorship?
Well, if we start our own distributor, we cannot legally own our brewery and a distribution house. So starting a third-party distributor, it still would have to be owned by someone who is not the owner of the brewery, for example, can't have his wife open a distributorship house, for example. Mm-hmm. So what you still have in that case is a third-party that owns your path to market, and you also create a massive inefficiency.
Okay. Cindy on Facebook, the rule sounds stupid. Old Mecklenburg Brewery and all the other craft beers should be able to brew and distribute how they see fit. Stewart on Facebook, local breweries are one of the most sustainable boons to our economy, so much so that that was a leading case for repealing prohibition. Why would anyone support a backwards law which only hurts breweries, consumers, and local economies? A question that our two guests around this table are asking themselves even now. But that's not the case. On the other side, Tim Kent is executive director of the North Carolina Beer and Wine Wholesalers Association. That's a trade association for beer and wine distributors. And he joins us now by phone from Raleigh. Tim, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. You say that North Carolina, by far, has the most permissive and favorable laws for craft beer of any state in the southern U.S. Does that mean that given the explosion of craft breweries and the explosion of consumer interest in their product, that those laws shouldn't be revisited?
I want to give you a comparison. Our neighboring states of Georgia, Virginia, and South Carolina allow no self-distribution at all. We are by far the best and the strongest craft beer state of any in the mid-Atlantic and the southeastern United States. The craft beer industry is growing at 15% plus for the last 5 years. The craft beer movement is growing. It's thriving. We as distributors are excited about it. The system that we have works.
Why are you – you didn't answer my question, first of all. Does that mean it shouldn't be revisited?
This issue has been brought before the legislature every year since 2003, and the bill has never gotten out of committee.
Why is that?
The legislature has spoken about this issue, and I want to try to put this in perspective for you, Mike. There are only two North Carolina craft brewers that produce more than 25,000 barrels. They are Highland in Asheville, and there's Foothills in Winston-Salem. Both of those companies willingly have worked together with distributors for a number of years, and they have grown their business. So the vast majority of brewers, more than 90% of the 4,100 breweries nationwide, produce less than 7,000 barrels. So we're not talking about an issue that affects all of the craft brewers in the state. We're talking about an issue that affects Old Mecklenburg, and what they want to do is they want to change the law to enable them to do something that others can't do.
In an op-ed piece that you wrote, that appeared at least in the Charlotte Business Journal, you said that a vocal group of brewers wants to deregulate the industry to increase their bottom line at the expense of public health and consumer choice. How can raising the cap on the number of barrels brewed and allowing those craft brewers to distribute their own product be something that threatens the public health and consumer choice?
Alcohol is a unique product, okay? It is regulated for a reason. I'm a free enterprise guy by nature, but alcohol is not a free market product. Alcohol is highly regulated. It's heavily taxed by both the state and federal government. It's the only product that is the subject of two constitutional amendments. You know, if this was an ordinary product, then we wouldn't have age restrictions on its use. Let me try to put this in perspective for you. All this talk about changing the distribution law is really for one reason, and that's so one or two established breweries in Charlotte can have an unfair competitive advantage in the Charlotte market against a whole bunch of other up-and-coming local breweries. You know, Ryan said at the outset that 7 years ago, Old Mecklenburg was the first and the only brewery in Charlotte. Today, there's 24 of those. And what the law that we have that's in place is designed to do is to help incubator breweries get a start, get their product to the marketplace, and have access to the market. I would argue that once you reach 25,000 barrels, you're not an incubator brewery anymore. Old Mecklenburg is a successful business. It is an established business. 25,000 barrels is equivalent to 8.25 million bottles of beer. They're not an incubator business. They need to play by the same rules that Sierra Nevada, New Belgium, Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors, and hundreds of other breweries.
Sure, but you're talking about economies of scale that are gigantic. I mean, humongous. Anheuser-Busch produces so much more beer than Old Mecklenburg. It's a joke.
But what about Foothills and Highland?
How much do they produce?
Established North Carolina
brewers. How much do they produce?
About 40,000 barrels.
40,000 barrels. What does Anheuser-Busch produce? What is Bud Light? How much Bud Light do they produce?
I really have no idea, Mike. You know, there's a lot of talk about...
Is it comparable? Is it comparable?
What's that?
The production of Budweiser or Bud Light or Coors, is it comparable to what...
They're much larger producers. You know, I'd like to stress one point, and we're all very excited about the craft beer growth and business. And Charlotte is rightfully proud of the growth of its local breweries. But you have a lot of great local beer distributors in the Charlotte market. Six companies employ more than 800 people in the greater Charlotte area. Those are good-paying jobs. Average compensation package of $70,000 or more. These are full-time jobs, people who are receiving good benefits, who are distributing a wide range of products to the market. You know, we're champions of the craft beer movement. So, we're responsible for delivering a wide variety of beers to the marketplace have never been available to consumers before. The market is working.
So what about the argument that they make that once you sign a contract with a distributor, the distributor takes ownership of the brand, pretty much controls everything about your brand, including its availability on shelves and taps, and it makes it almost the law makes it almost impossible for brewers to fire their distributors if they're not meeting sales goals or even setting sales goals. What about that argument?
Well, I'm glad you asked the question because I heard the conversation earlier, and I want to set the record straight.
Okay.
North Carolina law, which was established in 2012, enables craft brewers to get out of a distribution agreement within 5 business days. That's a privilege that's not extended to larger breweries like Anheuser-Busch or Sierra Nevada or Oscar Blues or New Belgium. They can get out of an agreement without good cause within 5 business days.
So
that's a very reasonable accommodation that only exists in a total of 4 states in America. North Carolina is a leader in providing that kind of escape clause for craft brewers from franchise agreements.
So when a craft brewer decides to enter into an agreement with a distributor so that they can go over that cap, for one thing, and also so they can get a wider distribution of their product, what does that distributor have to do for them? What do they normally do for that brand?
They market the product. They help build the brand. They get them access to retail marketplaces that they don't otherwise have availability to. Let me give you the example of Foothills Brewery out of Winston-Salem. 3 years ago, Foothills was producing 8,000 or 9,000 barrels of beer a year. They were self-distributing the product. They decided they wanted to grow the product. They hired a distribution network of about 6 or 7 distributors across the state of North Carolina. They're now selling beer in 3 or 4 neighboring states. They're hoping to produce and distribute as much as 70,000 barrels in the next couple of years. What I'm showing you is that the system works. You work with distribution networks. You get your product to a wider range of consumers. You're able to build your brand. And I got to tell you, every significant brewer in this country works with one or more distributors.
What about the story?
Whether you're Oskar Blues, whether you're New Belgium, whether you're Miller Coors, or whether you're Anheuser-Busch, that's how you get your products to consumers.
What about the story we heard earlier today from Brian Meredith, who in his four restaurants has stopped serving Anheuser-Busch products because they are allegedly incentivizing their distributors to sell more of their product and less of the craft beer or smaller brewers' products, and that if you, in some cases, sell any of them, you're not going to get your bonus for sales. What about that? That seems like an unfair trade practice to me. What about that?
First of all, the incentive program does not include craft brewers that produce less than 15,000 barrels a year. So, in fact, Anheuser-Busch distributors are.
But
being
then, but isn't couldn't the argument be made that Tim
encouraged to help local brewers build their brands?
Tim, the couldn't.
Second thing I'm going to say is that the incentive program is currently being discussed as a term or a condition for the approval of the merger between Anheuser-Busch InBev and SAB Miller. The U.S. Justice Department is considering that issue, and that's something they're probably going to make a ruling on here sometime in the next 12 to 18
months.
But
if you let that incentive not apply to anybody producing less than 15,000 barrels of beer a year, aren't you deliberately keeping the small breweries small?
Listen, Old Mecklenburg is a good business. They're a successful business. But they would like to have the whole marketplace in Charlotte to themselves, and they can't anymore. There's 24 local breweries, and it's a highly competitive marketplace. We have 4,100 breweries in America. Back in the early 1980s, we had less than 50 breweries. Consumers have more choice than ever before. It's a crowded marketplace, and it's competitive. And the consumer's the winner here because they have access to more brands and greater variety than they've ever had before.
We haven't talked about what the use of a distributor costs these breweries. There must be a cost because distributors are not in the business to do this out of the goodness of their heart. How does that impact the bottom line of breweries that use distributors?
Well, I can't tell you how it impacts the bottom line of breweries, but I can tell you this, is that independent beer distributors like the ones that service the Charlotte area, those are independent operators. They have invested hundreds of millions of dollars in trucks, in refrigerated warehouses, and in people. You know, those trucks that you see driving around town that have logos on them, they're not owned by the brewery. They're owned by the distributor. And it's the distributor that pays those salaries. It's the distributor that moves the product, pays all the fuel costs. Those are costs associated with doing business.
But if,
and the distributors are doing a great job of getting product variety to the market.
If you're a small brewer and you're trying to grow, isn't it in your best interest to get your product on as many shelves and as many taps as possible? And if you hand that job over to distributors, are they really going to be pushing as hard to get your product out there as you would, particularly when most people take the path of least resistance? It's probably a lot easier to put Stella Artois on a tap than it is to put Noda on a tap.
Well, not really, because I spend a lot of time in Charlotte, Mike, and I visit a lot of establishments, and I go into those establishments, and I see a lot of Noda, and I see a lot of Old Mecklenburg, and in fact, there's a lot of places where there's only two or three taps, and those are the ones that are there. But it's a changing marketplace. 7 years ago, there was one brewery in Charlotte. Today, there's 24. There's great up-and-coming breweries like Sugar Creek Brewing and the Unknown Brewery that are now developing a marketplace presence. And the laws that we have in place in North Carolina encourage those incubator breweries so that they can get their product to market and so that they aren't blocked from being in the marketplace. You know, I'm going to go back to what I think the real motive here is behind this desire to raise the self-distribution law, because it's only going to affect one or two breweries. They're having difficulty right now coming to grips with the fact that they have more competition now in the marketplace than they've ever had. And by expanding their self-distribution opportunity, they're putting giving themselves an unfair competitive advantage against all of these other up-and-coming breweries, in addition to the national brands which are coming to the marketplace because of our distributors.
I have about a minute left, Tim. According to Time magazine, Big Beer has a 5-point plan to crush the craft beer revolution. One, create their own quasi-craft brands. They've done that to a point. Two, snatch up craft breweries if they put themselves up for sale. They've done that. Three, defend traditional American beers and bash the snobbery of craft beer. There have been ad campaigns that do that. Control distribution, they kind of do. And five, merge and overwhelm the marketplace. And that is beginning to happen. Should we see this as a sinister plot or simply as competitive spirit?
We have a very competitive beer market. And I'm going to stress one point in closing. In North Carolina, our beer distributors are independent operators. They are not owned by the breweries. In 15 other states, brewers do own the distribution system. We don't want that to happen in North Carolina. We intend to maintain an independent operation system and develop a system where we can deliver a wide range of variety.
Tim Kent is Executive Director of the North Carolina Beer and Wine Wholesalers Association. Before that, Ryan Self with Old Mecklenburg Brewery and Brian Meredith with Queen City Q. Charlotte Talk.